Hot Ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is January 26th, 2026. I hope you all made it through this miserably cold and snowy weekend all in one piece. And once again this morning, we are talking about precious metals. Good God, it just will not stop. Is anybody else out there getting nervous like I am about this? Anyone? I mean, look, hey, I'm on the right side of a vertical move. Don't get me wrong. Not complaining. But we talked about this last week. What the hell is breaking somewhere else? It's got to be going on somewhere else. $110 silver this morning. All right, we hit 99 during the stream on Friday. We didn't quite touch 100 right after the sign-off. We hit 100. We didn't spend very much time in the hundreds. We're already talking about 110. Gold blew right through 5,000, already over $5,100. The gold to silver ratio is down to 46.5. This historic rally, it's a vertical move, and it's just not stopping it. And look, Jim Cramer gave us the all clear today. I mean, Jim Cramer comes out and says, I like gold, but I don't like silver, which is just like chef's kiss. You just know silver's going to rip well into the 120s now that Cramer came out with a bearish take on the white metal. Guys, you know, we'll look at the charts and everything, and we're going to just like look at it and admire it. Again, I said late last week that there's just no point in trying to analyze where it's going here. We are in a short squeeze, a blow off top in metals. I have no idea where we're going, no idea when we're going to stop, no idea how far we're going to fall once the reversal hits. We are in uncharted territory. Enjoy the show. Be careful on leverage. Don't be borrowing money to make levered bets on, no, it's going to go to $500 just to get wiped out. Don't forget to take some profits along the way. So what is driving the rally this morning? And it's important to understand, if you think the rally can go on more, understand why. What's your bull case? And the bull case for precious metals is coming from Japan this morning. And I swear last week we talked a lot about the green herring that was distracting us, and that I thought that Japan was really the much bigger story last week. What happened with the Japanese bond market and then the intervention later in the week that it turns out was different than we initially thought it was. We'll talk a little bit more about that. That was the biggest story in the world last week. It didn't get as much attention as it deserved. But right now this morning, we've got the Dixie, the U.S. dollar is falling. It's at its lowest level in 4 months. The yen is surging, a sudden strengthening of the Japanese yen. That's interesting. Yen carry trade guys are going to be all over that one this morning. So what's going on now? There's speculation that the United States and the Japanese financial authorities, whether the central banks or the finance ministry and the treasury, that there will be coordinated intervention in the market. Because on Friday, when we thought there was intervention going on by the Japanese finance ministry, it turns out it was rate checks by the U.S. and the Japanese. And a rate check, and I'm paraphrasing here, and some of my Forex guys could probably explain this a little bit better than me, but I'm going to take a stab at this one. Rate checks is when you get a phone call and it's Scott Bessent or it's the trading desk at the New York Fed. And they say to some guy at a big bank, hey, what's the exchange rate or what's the bid-ask spread on the yen right now? That's interesting. And then they hang up. And then 30 seconds later, you get the same phone call from a guy at the Bank of Japan or a guy at the Japanese finance ministry. They call the same bank and say, hey, what's the bid-ask spread on the yen? That's interesting. And the guy says, holy crap. I just got a phone call from Japanese and U.S. authorities within a few minutes of each other. He runs to his boss, and the boss reaches the obvious conclusion that the governments are conspiring to intervene and rig the exchange rate. Quick, everybody, get out of your yen shorts. That's rate checks, or at least that's my interpretation of what these articles are telling me this morning. Basically, the finance ministries or the central banks were calling these banks in order to create the appearance that they are about to act to intervene and to rig Forex markets. And it's a way to avoid having to do that in the first place. They're jawboning pretty much. And it worked. The yen strengthened very suddenly and the dollar weakened. So like, let's take all of this in aggregate with some of the things we talked about last week in Japan. You had a massive crash in long duration Japanese bonds last week. And it was caused by a paltry amount of selling. only about $240, $250 million worth of Japanese 40-year JGBs were sold on Monday last week or Tuesday last week, and it crashed the Japanese bond market by 25 basis points, one of the biggest bond markets in the world. Tiny little bit of selling. The market couldn't absorb any of it without crashing. Then we get this wild move in the yen, as we suspect it's intervention by the finance ministry. Turns out it wasn't. It was coordination between the U.S. and the Japanese. And so everybody's wondering, okay, they're going to conspire to rig markets. The big print is coming. More stimmies are coming in Japan. The Fed is printing money over here. They're talking about rates. We'll talk about some other things at the Fed later in the show. And then we wonder why gold is $5,100. And look, silver is a very illiquid market, and silver's just going to react even more strongly than gold is, because for every move gold makes, silver makes a move and a half. It makes sense why metals are ripping here. And I wish metals would slow down a little bit. I wish they would just go up in a calm, orderly fashion, up and to the right. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind making money. But something is going wrong catastrophically somewhere else that we can't see right now, and they're not telling us what it is. We can speculate, we can wonder, and we can hypothesize, but until it actually happens, we just won't know. All right, so what else is going on in the world this morning? Plenty. NVIDIA is buying $2 billion worth of CoreWeave stock. Aha, I freaking told you so. I freaking told you this would happen. All right, NVIDIA is already buying their own chips. NVIDIA is buying their own chips using CoreWeave as a special purpose vehicle to pump their own sales. It's been my theory since 2023. Stand by it this morning. The story being told is that NVIDIA is buying these $2 billion worth of CoreWeave shares in order to speed up efforts to add 5 gigawatts of data center capacity by 2030. All right, quiet part out loud. CoreWeave can't afford to build the data centers that they've promised to build because CoreWeave is a shit business that doesn't make money, and they're going to go bankrupt unless NVIDIA gives them more money to buy their own chips, which has been my problem with CoreWeave all along. There is no reason this company should even exist in the first place. The only reason CoreWeave was even created out of thin air was to pump NVIDIA's sales. And it's also why I'm not short CoreWeave, because I would put money on it. At some point, NVIDIA is just going to buy the company outright to avoid the headline risk of CoreWeave going bankrupt. And they're doing it incrementally here with this little $2 billion nibble that they're taking today. I think this ends with NVIDIA buying the company outright, which is why I'm not short CoreWeave. But full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA, and I think it's just a matter of time. They're trying to delay the inevitable here. OpenAI is in the Middle East trying to raise $50 billion from the oil sheiks, you know, to save the planet because Sam Altman's an effective altruist. Okay, that makes sense somehow. Meanwhile, their own board of directors chairman is out saying, yeah, OpenAI might be in a bubble as their CEO is trying to raise cash in the Middle East. They're putting ads in ChatGPT, which Sam Altman said just a few months ago was a last resort of a dying company. Whoops, that quote might come back to haunt you. Guys, this AI bubble is on thin ice. The end is nigh for that one. And you can see it also with SoftBank halting plans to buy data center firm Switch this morning. This was a rumored buyout that was going to happen. Turns out Masa-san doesn't have the money because he spent everything he has, even having to leverage his ARM shares in order to, what was it? What was the big stake? Was it Oracle's debt they were buying? No, the OpenAI, the money they had promised to OpenAI. Anyways, they have to cancel their plans to buy Switch, which means SoftBank is not going to be able to build the Stargate data centers they promised to build. No surprises there. They never had the money to begin with. We've got the Commerce Department is buying a stake in USA Rare Earth. Another example of the government buying a stake in a rare earth company. They've done this with a couple of different names now. Interestingly, though, this time it's the Commerce Department that is buying the stake in the company. It's been the Department of Defense or the Department of War, Department of whatever they're calling it this week, that has bought the stakes in the other companies. That stock is ripping. Look, anybody who mines anything is ripping this morning. The copper miners, the silver miners, the rare earth miners, they are all on a tear. Natural resources is the place to be these days. And we were talking about the Fed earlier and gold 5,100. Well, check out this story. Rick Rieder, the chief investment officer of BlackRock, is now being floated as a candidate for the next chairman of the Federal Reserve. Tell me the big print and the big asset pump isn't coming or is coming without actually telling me. The chief investment officer of the biggest asset manager in the world is going to be running the money printer? Gee, you think he might pump assets? Just maybe? And then we look over at gold at $5,100. Yeah, makes sense. Yep. Good God. Where I mean, they're not even pretending anymore. We've had a couple of other names have been floated as potentials for the Fed chairman. President Trump is having a hard time finding somebody who the market is going to accept, who he can directly control. And that's what it comes down to. We're going to float this BlackRock guy now and see how the market reacts to that, I guess. And speaking of BlackRock, last one of the day, the BlackRock TCP Capital Corp. This is BlackRock's private credit fund. It's a publicly traded private credit fund. They are cutting the net asset value of its holdings by 19%. And remember, the net asset value of private credit funds, there's no price discovery in these companies, all right? So it's basically just BlackRock's like, sure, it's worth this. And then there's no way to verify that. There's no open market that it trades in. The market says, I don't believe you. When they start selling your stock starts trading at a big discount to net asset value. And then finally, BlackRock says, okay, fine. We'll lower our price by 19%. So a fifth of your investment just got wiped out. Oh, and don't worry, though. We're going to cut our management fee by one third. We're going to give you a discount. Right, we lost 20% of your money, but it's only going to cost you two thirds of what we told you it would cost you for the service rendered. Look, private credit is a black hole that money disappears into, and it's being pumped into your 401ks right now as we speak. This is the kind of garbage that has been cleared by that executive order last year, allowing alternative assets into 401ks. Don't worry, we're going to democratize these private holdings. We're going to give Main Street a place at the table. Yep, that's all subtitled for bag holders wanted. So BlackRock has had to cut that fund by a significant 19%, and it's probably going to fall further. Guys, we have got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today? Don't forget that like button. And that subscribe button for your new guys so you can come back and have coffee with the melon heads every morning as we go through markets. And it looks like stocks have just swung to a positive. The S&P is higher by 8 points or 0.11%. It has been red for most of the morning. The Dow swung to a gain as well, up 71 points or 0.14% higher. But the NASDAQ is still just barely negative, off by 8 points or 0.03%. The dollar is down significantly this morning, lowest we've been in a few months here, 97.16, off by 44 basis points. The big story here is the sudden strengthening of the yen. We'll show you that chart in just a little bit. This is also contributing to the run in metals. The dollar going lower is rocket fuel for precious metals typically. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit lower in most places along the yield curve this morning. The 30-year yield is at 4.804. That's off by almost 3 basis points. The 10-year yield is at 4.212%, off by also almost 3 basis points. The 2-year yield, meanwhile, down about a half a point at 3.599%. And the 1 month is at 3.688, off by a fraction of a point. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, didn't have a very good weekend. We're sitting here around 87,674, off the lows. We very briefly had an 85 handle yesterday, recovered a little bit of that here, but still Bitcoin struggling in the high 80s here. And the fireworks, once again, in the gold market and the silver market. Metals are ripping here. Spot gold, $5,067 right now, off its highs. We hit an intraday high of 51.11 and 11 cents. That's a lot of ones there. But at the moment, up by $85 and change, or 1.7%. April COMEX futures are along for the ride at $5,103, up 86 bucks, or 1.75%. Intraday high of 51.45 for that. And then we look at my favorite of the shiny silver, 109.79 for spot silver, up another $6.82, 6.6% higher. This silver volatility is nutty. Intraday high of $110.88. We almost hit 111. Good God, guys. We were in the 20s not too long ago. We have now more than quadrupled in less than 2 years. March COMEX silver futures, 109.72, up by $8.34, 8.25% higher. Intraday high of $110.90. I like the shiny. Copper is up by 0.8%. Platinum, 2.1% higher. Look at platinum, 2,800. Good God, Bob Coleman, again, monster call last March when he came on the channel and talked about how his fund had just added platinum, and then platinum just goes vertical like 2 days later. Outstanding job by Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vaults. He is at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. If you don't already follow him, you should be. Palladium is up by 3.8% as well, over 2,000 here. Crude oil down about a half a percent this morning, $60.74 for March WTI crude. And natural gas, let's check in on the Widowmaker here. It looks like they rolled over the contract here at $3.67. Big drop in natural gas. I think they rolled over the contract because I heard that spot gas was trading over $6 at one point this weekend. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that print there. But let's take a look at the chart here. Look at this silver chart. And this is very, very significant, this silver chart, because this means nothing. We're in the middle of a vertical move and a short squeeze and a blow off top. Looking at the chart is freaking pointless, guys. I just love the look of it. I got to confess, that's what we're doing here. $109.58. I don't know where it's going. I really don't. Gold, same thing. Oh my God, look at the chart. There's no point in charting gold right now. No point whatsoever. It's going up. It might stop. It might not. That is the summary of my highly technical analysis this morning. It might go higher or it might not. Oh man. And meanwhile, the gold to silver ratio just keeps falling, 46.26. And my friends Bob Coleman and George Noble did a Twitter Spaces over the weekend. It was a very good one. I caught quite a bit of it. Interesting point that Bob Coleman made. A lot of people are saying the gold to silver ratio, that it heavily favors silver right now, or you know, basically a lot of people out there trading silver for gold, something I have talked about doing. Bob points out that, yeah, if you go back over the last 20, 30, 40 years, silver looks expensive relative to gold right now. But keep in mind, throughout history, the gold to silver ratio has been somewhere more like 10 to 35 throughout history. Really, it's only recent history where gold to silver ratio has been in the 60s up to 120 at one point we hit. Are we in this new era of more expensive silver relative to gold, or is this a flash in the pan that's going to rapidly correct? We just don't know. Meanwhile, dollar hits four-month low as gold tops 5,000, markets wrap. Now, this is important here because, once again, I want to emphasize Japan, guys. Everybody was all bunched up over Greenland last week, and I think that took away from just how significant the move in Japan was. The dollar extended its sell-off on Monday as speculation swirled that the U.S. could coordinate intervention with Japanese authorities to support the yen. Stocks wavered while gold topped 5,000 an ounce. Stocks have since reversed into gains. The greenback fell for a third day, losing ground against most major peers to reach its lowest levels since September. The yen rallied to the highest in 2 months. Futures on the S&P were little changed. Precious metals extended their breakneck rally as gold hit a fresh record and silver surged 6%. Signs that Tokyo and Washington coordinated on rate checks fueled the volatility in foreign exchange markets as traders viewed the steps as preparation for direct intervention. Joint U.S.-Japan action would give authorities greater power to deter speculators after the yen fell to an 18-month low earlier this month. Now, this is important, guys, because this isn't just the Japanese finance ministry or the BOJ intervening in the yen market here. This is the U.S. and the Japanese coordinating. The last time something like this happened was in 2011 after the Tohoku earthquake, when there was a sudden strengthening in the yen and the Japanese and U.S. authorities coordinated to weaken the yen. But in this case, they're coordinating to strengthen the yen, something that hasn't happened in a long time. The bigger signal is policy coordination, said Daniel Baiza, Senior Vice President at FrontClear. If markets interpret coordination as willingness to tolerate easier global dollar conditions, especially alongside a dovish Fed reaction function, that could reinforce short-term dollar downside. Dollar gets weaker because we're going to print them or create them digitally, use them to support the value of the yen, coordinating with the Japanese. Yep, that's going to send the dollar lower. Yep, that's going to send gold higher. And again, this whole silly narrative here, that this is a great way to deter speculators, right? Channeling Richard Nixon. And I'm going to do my Nixon again. Remember why we closed the gold window in 1971? Remember, it was to defend the dollar against the speculators. Yes, President Nixon, that's still defending the dollar against those speculators here some 55 years later. Are we done defending against the speculators yet? Oh, now we're defending the yen from speculators as well. It's certainly not desperate actions because of our obscene monetary policy and debt monetization and endless government deficits paid for by looting the public via inflation. No, no, no. We are defending against speculators. Those ruthless speculators will get you every time. And right now, the speculators are closing out their yen shorts because when you find out the Japanese and U.S. government are conspiring against your trade, you get the hell out of that trade. And that's what happened. You see these big red candles. That is people covering their yen shorts. Sudden strengthening of the yen. But they got to be careful. The yen was very weak. We approached that 160 level that historically is where the Japanese government has intervened. But if they're not careful, they could trigger something a little bit more like this yen carry trade panic in 2024. That sudden strengthening of the yen that almost tanked markets two summers ago. We're a long way from that level. I mean, the yen went as low as 139 to the dollar back then. We're sitting here at 153. But again, what happened in Japan last week, very significant. And they're talking about that more in this article in Bloomberg this morning. Japan bond crash unleashes a $7 trillion risk for global markets. They might be inflating the risk a little bit there. $7 trillion, I think they're just looking for a big number. But again, don't downplay how significant what happened in Japan last week was. As the country hurtles toward the snap election called by Prime Minister Takaichi, more unpredictable and violent price swings are expected. Days after Japanese bonds crashed, sending tremors through global financial markets, traders were still stunned by the speed and breadth of it all. A quarter-point surge in yields in a single session, marveled Pramal Dhawan, a fund manager at Pacific Investment Management. Let that sink in. And again, the thing to let really sink in about that is it was less than $250 million of selling that caused that 25 basis point move in Japanese government bonds. It wasn't a stampede for the exits. It was only a couple of people selling. That's what's so significant about this. In the Japanese government bond market of old, it would take weeks, sometimes months, for yields to eke out tick by tick a move of that magnitude. For most of the 21st century, the JGB market was so steady and interest rates were stuck at such rock bottom levels that Tokyo was viewed by investors around the world as a source of both cheap funding and of stability during times of global turmoil. Last week's sell-off accompanied by dramatic swings in the yen made clear those days are over. Inflation, long dormant in Japan, has taken hold. And moreover, Prime Minister Sunai Takaichi is pushing fiscal stimulus plans that would swell a government debt pile that is already uncomfortably large. As a result, investors have been frantically sending bond yields up to levels once unthinkable, more than 4% on the longest dated JGBs. That's exerting upward pressure on interest rates from the U.S. to Britain and Germany. Traders are braced for more disorderly market swings as Japan hurtles toward a February 8th snap election for which both Takaichi and her rivals have campaigned on looser budgets. That's amazing here. So in this snap election, we have a choice between more debt and more spending or more debt and more spending. And may the odds be ever in your favor. Good luck with that one. An even bigger worry for global markets over the long term is that the new normal of higher Japanese yields will prompt domestic investors to bring much more of their money back home. That's that unwind of the yen carry trade they're talking about there. Some $5 trillion of the country's capital is deployed overseas, and that's even before accounting for the yen that foreign funds have borrowed for their wagers and financial assets around the world. T. Rowe Price's Arif Hussein describes Japan's rising rates as a financial San Andreas fault line, with each tremor leading to feverish speculation over when the big one will come. The sell-off in the $7.3 trillion JGB market have been getting wilder and more frequent since the Bank of Japan ended its failed experiment with negative interest rates in March of 2024, with 9 occasions where losses were over 2 standard deviations worse than the average over the period. In other words, guys, the Japanese bond market is a freaking mess, and asset prices globally are propped up by the Japanese bond market. So you better pay attention to that. And this is a big factor in why gold in particular started to run last week. Remember last week, or before last week, silver was running kind of in a vacuum. Gold had been trading sideways up very slowly for a few months. Silver was the big story. But last week, especially on Tuesday, when the Japanese bond market melted down, gold started to rip too. And of course, when gold starts to rip, silver just catches rocket fuel. Pay attention to what's going on in Japan. Meanwhile, the biggest accounting fraud in history just got $2 billion bigger. NVIDIA invests $2 billion more in CoreWeave and offers a new chip. Why? Because CoreWeave is doomed unless daddy co-signs for more debt, or daddy takes on more equity, or backstops their sales, or backstops their IPO. All of the above NVIDIA has done to prop up CoreWeave. NVIDIA, the dominant maker of artificial intelligence chips, invested an additional $2 billion in CoreWeave to help speed up an effort to add more than 5 gigawatts of AI computing capacity by 2030. They just love to talk about those gigawatts, don't they? NVIDIA purchased more CoreWeave Class A common stock at $87.20 a share, the company said Monday. As part of the collaboration, CoreWeave will be among the first to deploy forthcoming NVIDIA products, including storage systems and new central processing units, or CPUs. Nobody cares about the CPUs, though. NVIDIA, already a CoreWeave investor, previously agreed to buy more than $6 billion in services from the firm through 2032. And this is what I love. All right, CoreWeave gives NVIDIA the money to buy NVIDIA's chips. And then once CoreWeave gives the money, I'm sorry, NVIDIA gives money to CoreWeave. Who's counting, though? NVIDIA gives the money to CoreWeave. CoreWeave gives the money back to NVIDIA to buy the chips. Now CoreWeave has the chips. And then NVIDIA says, don't worry, CoreWeave, if you can't rent them out, we'll rent up to $6 billion worth of GPU hours from you. All right, great. And then CoreWeave says, but daddy, we're still broke. And then NVIDIA says, okay, we'll buy $2 billion more of your stock. But don't worry, the demand is insane, right? I keep hearing about how the demand is insane, even though from what I can tell, NVIDIA appears to be the demand. NVIDIA is the demand. Yeah, okay. The investment is confidence in their growth and business and CoreWeave's management and confidence in their business model, said CEO Jensen Huang. No, it isn't. This is a bailout. Bailouts are not confident votes of confidence. But the partnership itself is more focused on aligning the two companies' engineering work and getting computing capacity online and artificially pumping our sales once again. CoreWeave, which went public last year in one of the biggest stock offerings of 2025, is now worth about $47 billion. It's known as a NeoCloud, a specialized cloud computing provider used by AI services. The NVIDIA investment will shore up CoreWeave's finances and help allay concerns about its costly spending spree on data centers. Does this allay concerns, or does this just highlight the fact that CoreWeave cannot survive without further capital infusions? And does this allay concerns about circular financing deals, or does this make them worse? Why is it every time these AI dirtbags do something sleazy, Bloomberg or CNBC has to tell us how it allays our concerns? No, it doesn't. I don't feel very allayed. Are you allayed? I am not allayed. Under their agreement, NVIDIA will assist CoreWeave with the purchase of land and power for data centers. It will also market CoreWeave's AI software and architecture designs to cloud partners. Well, and large business. All right. Are they going to do everything? Are they going to complete the paperwork when CoreWeave goes to the bathroom as well? Hey, Jensen, I'm done. Can you come? Yeah. Oh, my God. So let's see. They're going to give them money. They already backstopped their sales. They backstopped the IPO. What else are they doing? Okay, here's another $2 billion worth of stock. NVIDIA will also buy the land and the power for the data centers CoreWeave's going to use. It's going to market CoreWeave software. Okay. And tell me again, why is CoreWeave even considered a separate company from NVIDIA at this point? Are we still pretending that this isn't just a special purpose vehicle for NVIDIA sales? And CoreWeave shareholders this morning are celebrating getting diluted. They're buying the stock $104.52, up $11 or 12.5%. Good luck, guys. Again, the only business model here, the only bull case for CoreWeave is that one day out of desperation, NVIDIA will buy this company to avoid the headline risk of them going bankrupt. Meanwhile, SoftBank halts talks to buy data center firm Switch in a blow to Masa-san's Stargate ambitions. And I remember when they announced Stargate, I remember saying none of these companies have the money to do this. And everyone's like, oh, Jack, you're such a doomer. Well, here we are about 2 years later. SoftBank has halted talks about an acquisition of U.S. data center operator Switch Inc., a setback to founder Masa-san's ambition to roll out Stargate AI infrastructure, according to people familiar with the matter. For months, Son pursued a deal around $50 billion for Switch, which he doesn't have, convinced that direct control of the latter's network of energy-efficient data centers would help the $500 billion Stargate push to generate computing power for partner OpenAI, who is trying to raise money from the Middle East right now. But earlier this month, Sun conceded that a full acquisition was off the table and scrapped a planned January announcement, the people said, asking not to be named because the matter's private. The two sides remain in active discussions about a partial investment or a partnership, they said. Earlier this month, SoftBank inked a $3 billion deal to buy New York-listed investment firm Digital Bridge, which is a major backer of Switch. Representatives for SoftBank, Switch, and Digital Bridge declined to comment. The end of SoftBank's deal talks with Switch leaves its data center plans in limbo as Stargate announcements remain few and far between, said Bloomberg intelligence analyst Kirk Boudry and Chris Muckenstrom in a note. A strategic investment or partnership would fall short of the operational exposure that SoftBank has pursued in areas such as semiconductors and physical AI, they said. So another case of AI companies struggling to raise money, even as NVIDIA bails out CoreWeave once again. Shifting gears a little bit here, let's talk about another government stake in another rare earth company. USA Rare Earth shares jump 20% as Commerce Department takes equity stake. USA Rare Earth shares rallied on Monday after the critical mineral startup announced that the Department of Commerce will take an equity stake. Commerce has issued a letter of intent that would provide USA Rare Earth with a $1.3 billion loan and $277 million in federal funding. USA Rare Earth will issue Commerce 16.1 million shares of common stock and 17.6 million in warrants. Its stock soared more than 20% in pre-market trading after the announcement. The agreement is subject to finalization and approvals, of course. The capital infusion from the Trump administration will help USA Rare Earth advance its plan to build a magnet manufacturing plant in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and a mine at a rare earth deposit in Texas called Round Top. The Trump administration is building a Western rare earth and critical mineral supply chain as it seeks to reduce dependence on China. The Trump administration struck a landmark deal last year with rare earth miner MP Materials that included an equity stake, a price floor, and an offtake agreement. And it also took stakes in Lithium Americas and Trilogy Metals. Now you can add USAR to that list. Here's ticker USAR. It's currently up 28% ahead of the opening bell. It was up significantly more than that at one point. Over the last year, this one is up 109%. Look, government is shifting to a wartime economy, guys. We've been talking about this for a while. This is now, what, the fourth rare earth company that they've taken a stake in. This is all about shoring up the supply chain for stuff that goes boom, all for a what is looking increasingly inevitable, like a conflict in the South China Sea over Taiwan. Meanwhile, things at the Fed just went from bad to worse. Reader's market support and Fed plans seen as a boon for chair job. There is Rick Reeder. He's the chief investment officer of BlackRock, and he is now the front runner to be our next Fed chair. Oh, good. Rick Reeder's Wall Street bona fides and openness to making changes at the Federal Reserve have bolstered his candidacy for the central bank's top job, according to people familiar with the White House deliberations. The BlackRock executive is seen as looking the part of a central banker. I don't know what that means. And also grabbed President Trump's attention with his myriad of ideas for overhauling the Fed, according to people familiar with the matter. Also in Reeder's favor, he has never worked at the Fed, unlike the other three finalists for the job, and is viewed as not being beholden to the institution, said the people who requested anonymity. Reeder, one of four contenders to be Trump's pick to lead the central bank, has elicited positive reaction from bond market participants as Trump administration officials have sought investor views on the shortlist of Fed chair candidates. Other contenders included White House National Economic Director Kevin Hassett, Fed Governor Chris Waller, and former Fed official Kevin Warsh. Executives and investors attending the Davos World Economic Forum this week also privately expressed support for Reeder. Gee, you think the richest people in the world like the idea of an asset manager from BlackRock taking over the Fed and endlessly pumping more money into asset markets? You think that maybe went over pretty well with the WEFR types? You bet it did. Trump told reporters Thursday he finished interviewing candidates and already has a person in mind without elaborating further. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who has led the months-long Fed chair search, has said Trump could announce his decision as soon as next week. One concern about Reeder that has bubbled up in Trump's inner circle in recent days is about whether he will follow the president's cues to quickly cut interest rates once installed at the central bank or adopt an independent streak, the people said. President Trump wants a lackey at the Fed. He wants somebody who will cut and print at a phone call's notice. Maybe that's Rick Reeder. Maybe that's one of the Kevins or Waller, one of these guys. Either way, guys, in my opinion, it almost doesn't matter because the Fed is already cutting and printing. I mean, the Fed's probably going to hold later this week, but they're already printing up to $40 billion a month at a time when inflation is still well above their 2% target. So kind of like that election in Japan where it's like, do you want more debt and more money printing or do you want more debt and more money printing? It's like, okay, who's going to be the next Fed chair? The next Fed chair is either going to cut and print or he's going to cut and print. Good luck. And then we look over at gold at $5,100 and silver at $110. Yeah, makes sense. And speaking of BlackRock, one more nice one to round out the morning. BlackRock cuts the value of private debt fund by 19% and then waives the fee. This was your Friday afternoon news dump in the private credit industry. A BlackRock private debt fund expects to mark down the net value of its assets 19% after a string of troubled loans weighed on results, marking the latest sign of pressure in the private credit market. BlackRock TCP Capital Corp, a publicly traded middle market lending fund, expects to cut its net asset value per share to between 7.05 and 7.09 for the quarter ended December 31st, according to a regulatory filing. That compares to 8.71 as of September 30th. All right, so keep in mind, guys, one of the things with these private assets, they're not publicly traded. All right, the holdings in this fund don't change hands regularly. So what is the value of those holdings? Well, it's basically whatever BlackRock tells us they are. In other words, they just make it up. And we all know that these loans are going bad. We all know that these loans aren't worth what they claim they are. And so BlackRock is basically admitting, at least partially, that these things are worth less. So BlackRock is going to arbitrarily lower the value of these funds by 19%. This isn't price discovery. This is just them lowering their fake mark because there is no market to mark these assets to. They're impossible to value unless you sell them, and they're terrified of doing that. They certainly won't do that. The fund has struggled in part because of its exposure to e-commerce aggregators, companies that buy and manage Amazon sellers, as well as troubled home improvement company Renovo Home Partners, which has filed for bankruptcy with plans to liquidate. In other words, their debt is going bad. The vehicle is a business development company which pools together private credit loans and trades like a stock. BlackRock said it has waived one-third of its management fee for the last quarter. So this is important. The fund trades like a stock, but the holdings in the fund don't trade like a stock. They're whatever BlackRock says they are. And so you get these big differences between what the fund trades at and what BlackRock says it's worth. And when the fund trades so far below that net asset value, finally BlackRock has to say, all right, we get it. We'll lower the value. We'll lower our fake marks. We're sorry we lost 20% of your money. And because we feel terrible about that, we're only going to charge you two-thirds of the management fee for the courtesy of us losing 20% of your money. Very generous of BlackRock. The fund has been a component of BlackRock's private credit offering since the asset manager acquired Tennenbaum Capital Partners in 2018. BlackRock last year bought HPS Investment Partners for $12 billion to boost its footprint in private markets. And that last sentence is hilarious. We talked about that one in a video a few months ago. When BlackRock bought HPS Investment Partners, within a few days, HPS lost $150 million worth of bad loans to Karyox Capital because of a guy named Bankin Brombat who created a bunch of fake invoices and then borrowed against them. And somehow BlackRock completely missed that this company was basically bankrupt fraud and that all the invoices were fake. BlackRock buys HPS because they're so excited about putting their clients' money into these dog shit funds. And then a few days later, we find out, whoops, this company's a fraud. There goes $150 million. Fast forward a couple of months. Now we got to cut the net asset value by 19%. Don't worry, we're going to lower the management fees. Yep, private credit. These are Jamie Dimon's cockroaches here, guys. You're going to see a lot more of this in the future. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Nacho Man, who says, sorry about your coop, Jack. Be safe. Yes, we had a catastrophic failure. The coop is okay. We had a catastrophic failure of the chicken run over the weekend. Too much snow built up on the roof, and it went kablooey. It collapsed. So I think this storm may have put me out of the chicken business here. We're going to have to be finding a new home for our ladies, because I'm not about to go rebuild the chicken run in the middle of this mess outside. So, yep, that sucks. Appreciate the good feelings, though, Nacho Man. Thank you for supporting the channel. KC Culp, 6430. Not a lot to say. Was that a fat finger super chat, or did you mean to send something else? Mitch sent me a text if there was a question. If there wasn't, thank you very much, KC Culp. I appreciate that very much. Henry Rifle Owner PA says, Jack got a special charter to print money in basement, buying silver and gold with it, singing I'm the Man on the Silver Mountain. Well, congratulations on your special charter. I got to get me one of them money printers. It seems like that's the key to wealth. All right. I'm going to sell courses. I'm going to write a book, all this special stuff. I'll take out ads on YouTube, pumping it. And basically the gist of my course is going to be get yourself a money printer and print money like crazy and then buy a whole bunch of stuff with it. That's my key to developing wealth, right? Because, well, that's what the elites in this country do. Every time shit goes against them, every time their trades go bad, they just went to the government. The government says, all right, we'll print another trillion at the expense of Main Street, and we'll just give it to you. The big print is coming, guys. Why not? Good idea. Let's all get ourselves money printers. We're all going to be billionaires, and it's going to be great. Thank you, Henry, for supporting the channel. Steve Wojtas, 7217, says, with the run of precious metals, will governments, central banks get concerned about the value of fiat currencies? If so, what can they do about it? Well, I think we're already seeing that, Steve. See also that whole article about the U.S. coordinating with the Japanese in order to prop up the yen here. The only thing governments and central banks can do is a whack-a-mole approach. And every time they whack a mole, they make more moles. They make the problem worse, right? We had a breakdown in the bond market last week. That breakdown in the bond market was because Japan is having economic problems and they're trying to print and stimmy their way out of it. And that sent their currency sharply lower last week after their bond market broke down. And so what happens? Now they're coordinating with the U.S. to try to prop up the value of the yen, probably by creating dollars out of thin air and dumping them to buy yen on the open market. That's sending gold even higher, sending the dollar lower. So what's going to be the reaction to that? Every time something goes wrong, they do the same stupid thing over again. They make the problem worse, leading to further interventions. Now, you would think we have finally reached our limit where we can't do that anymore. And one thing I've learned over the last few years is never be surprised at what unbelievable financial degenerates our policymakers are. They will surprise you every time with their sleaze. So try not to say, oh, they wouldn't do that, because they show us over and over again that they would. And in the meantime, until we find out what that threshold is, what is the point where they can no longer print and cut their way out of it, this is where you want to be. That's just my take on that. That and gold. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel. Thank you, Carolina Joe, 777. Lucky number who gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, CJ. Can I call you CJ? And welcome to the Melon Heads, you 10 new members. Appreciate the support very much, sir. The Melon Patch groweth. And in honor of NVIDIA's $2 billion purchase of CoreWeave stock today, we've got Nacho Man with the circular accounting giving money to Mish so Mish can give the money back. So Mish can buy more memberships. And there is the memberships. If they can do circular, so can I, right, Mish? And there are 20 more memberships going on the tally. Thank you, Nacho Man, for growing the Melon Patch and for supporting the channel. Thank you, Mish, for backing up the play as well. Round and round we go, guys. Where do we stop? Hey, just a reminder, you 20 new members, I guess 30 new members now. Thanks also to Carolina Joe. Say thank you in the comments, guys, for that. And with that membership comes a free super chat every month. If you use that, I will read and respond to your questions live on the air, as I will now do for Miss Madison Hypes, who says 2030's big sell with millennials sell boomer inherit. Ah, their inheritance. So this is the as the boomers attrit, we'll put it mildly, as the boomers attrit and millennials and Gen X inherits their houses and sells their houses, will that create a housing correction? That I think is where we're going. And look, that's not like all the boomers don't just die on one day. I think they tried that. They called it COVID. It didn't quite work out. But no, like it's going to be a process. It's going to play out over several years. I do think it'll create selling pressure. I don't know about the demographics of like Gen X aging into the 50 plus demographic versus boomers, we'll say, aging out of it. There's a lot of 55 plus communities that have sprang up, gated communities, age restricted communities over the years. I think we'll probably see some of them will drop their age restricted status in order to increase the value of the homes within the community. I think we'll probably see a lot of that happen over the next, we'll say, 10 to 20 years or so. Will it result in a housing crash? I mean, it might, right? Like the millennials are going to inherit the house. Are they going to move into it? Maybe they'll just move into it and they won't sell it. I think most will probably sell it because of limitations of work and where they're going to be. And who can afford to buy it? Well, nobody. So you'd think prices would go lower. And then you have things like Fannie and Freddie buying $200 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities and all these things that the government is doing to further inflate home prices. And then, okay, the BlackRock guy is going to take over at the Fed. He's probably going to start buying up MBS too. So will it result in lower home prices? I don't know. It would if everybody took their fingers off the scale. This would result in lower home prices. But that is a big if. They're not going to take their fingers off the scale. They keep telling us that. So thank you very much, Madison, for supporting the channel. James Richter says, you got to repair for the girls. I appreciate it. It's I don't know how you repair a bunch of mangled metal that's buried under 2 feet of snow like Johnny on the Spot. For now, I got to get him into a safe place. There is no fixing it. It's got to be completely rebuilt. It's totally mangled. But thank you, James. Appreciate the super chat, sir. MJ741G says, don't quit homestead grit. You can revise design. You got this. Yeah, I can revise the design. I mean, don't get me wrong. I could. It's really freaking cold out and buried under snow. I just don't want to revise the design. That's the big thing there. Look, having chickens was great. It sucks in the winter. And when the shit collapses in the middle of a snowstorm, maybe Mother Nature is saying, Jack, the chicken business isn't for you. Maybe that's what nature's saying. Anyways, thank you, guys. I appreciate all the well wishes for the coop. Thank you, M&J, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Thank you guys so much for the super chats and for the support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you for supporting via memberships. Links down below should you feel so inclined. I'm Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.